and people had forgotten, as now we come to accept, that the Afghan war was getting out of control. And so when I went to the Corongal Valley, I was completely shocked by the amount of fighting going on. It completely surprised me. Not, you know, I was gobsmacked.
When was this?
This was in like September 2007.
Constant cover.
Yeah, I mean, they had at the end of October 2007, 18% of all fighting in the whole of Afghanistan was in that six-mile-long valley. 70% of American bombs being dropped were inside that valley, and battle company I was with was taking a casualty rate of 25%, killed or wounded. You know, I mean, some of the other companies outside of the Corongal in the same 173rd Airborne had a casualty rate, killed or wounded, of over 50%. You know, so it was huge. And so the images that I made out there were very action orientated, were kind of very classic photojournalism. You know, people said reminiscent of kind of, you know, I mean, it's, you know, of the kind of classic kind of war photography. And but I did that because I wanted people to see that there was a big lot of fighting going on. As what was interesting as the war, as it went on in the, going out of the Corongal, as the time progressed. And interesting enough, I'll add that when I went back through the public information of Bagram in April 2008, the public information told me there that since subsequent to our visits to the Corongal for Vanity Fair and ABC News, and I might add, you know, Elizabeth Rubin's article in the New York Times, because that was a, you know, great article as well, that 80% of photographic embeds coming to Afghanistan were asking to go to the Corongal Valley. That just kind of blew me away. I mean, that's, you know... So, anyway, I go back, and the fighting after a while kind of bored them, because it got boring. Because if you're in a lot of combat after a while, you know, a lot of it's kind of, I mean, it's not, if you're inside a base that's being attacked as the Restrepo was, you're fairly in a good defensive position. So the likelihood of you being killed in Restrepo itself was pretty low, unless they got a mortar on you. You know, if they had an indirect, accurate indirect, which...
Personally, I've yet to be bored in combat.
So what got me really interested was the interpersonal relationships between the men and me. And that was really interesting. That was like a facet of war that I hadn't really thought about, that is a big part of fighting and combat, as we all know. But it's not really... it's very rarely represented, or if it's represented, it's represented as an afterthought. Like, you always have the set of pictures of fighting, then you have like downtime, guys playing basketball or people, you know, cleaning their guns. It's like an afterthought. And I guess, you know, in Infidel, in the book, what I wanted to do was really make a book that was, well, it does a number of things. One is that a lot of the substance of the book is it brings the idea of male bonding to the fore, because that's a huge part of the war machine. If you think about it, that's really the most important thing. You know, why war exists is because mankind has worked out that if you take 15 men and put them together, I mean, apes have worked this out. That's why apes fight. I mean, you know, in Sebastian's book, he talks about this. It's like why that there's a group, the number of platoon is like a perfect group. It's like a kind of hardwired genetic code. And that if you bring a small group of men together and put them dependent upon each other, they will kill for each other. And that's a core part of the war machine. I mean, it's like photographers are photographing the military war machine and the fighting, but why aren't, that's also a really important thing.
Really,
that primal male bonding. And a friend of mine's grandfather said to me, he said, you know, he fought in the Second World War, said, only in war can men show true love for one another. And that's because love has been inverted in war in some ways. It's been used as for the war machine. So that whole idea is really, I found fascinating. And as I spent more time in Restrepo and looked away from the combat and towards these men, that idea was really like, wow, this is interesting. And also it was interesting to make like the images of the guys sleeping, which were images that where you have the knowledge you're fighting in your head, and when you look at those pictures, it tells you something else about the soldiers.
Tell me what the pictures look like in this book, since we don't have it in front of us.
The pictures really show different images of life on a very small outpost, and they're very unprotocol-like. I spent a lot of time, so the guys by the end are kind of walking around in fighting in shorts and flip-flops, and they didn't mind me photographing them in a state of undress. And a lot of the guys, you see the images of the guys really bonding closely together. You know, there's a lot of play fights and hugging, and there's a lot of guys, you know, they'd have their bodies tattooed. And part of the book is shows you these tattoos. And in fact, you know, this the word, the title of the book, Infidel, comes from across from a tattoo they used to tattoo across their chests, the word Infidel. They had a tattoo gun out there at the outpost. And interesting enough, and this was another thing about the book that I like, that you know, links to my earlier project about young men and war in Liberia, was that in Liberia, I was with a group of heavily armed men in a room, embedded, although I was never asked about that embed, you know, embedded with a rebel army that was trying to overthrow Charles Taylor. In some ways, that situation was pretty dissimilar to being embedded with a group of young American soldiers fighting in Afghanistan.
Right.
And what was interesting was I photographed a set of war graffiti.
In Liberia.
In Liberia, left on the walls of buildings that the rebels had taken over. And it was a way that you could kind of trace the war. And what I came to understand was, in photographing the tattoos on the men's bodies, that men in combat, these young men, were photographing things that were significant, happened to them, that were significant, or their units on their bodies. They were tattooing themselves. And so in some ways it's exactly the same thing. They're marking out a kind of, it's a psychic territory that they're marking on their bodies. And that is also comes out in the book. We show that. We show kind of, you know, war tattoos.
Right. So
and then we take, it's very intimate.
It's not action, it's not.
Well, what happens is, as you go through the book, you gain this intimacy with the soldiers. It's about tattoos, and they joke around. You see guys playing golf and fighting, and it seems very lighthearted. And then the latter part of the book, they go to war. And it ends, as war does, in ways that are really upsetting and unpredictable. And it takes you through that, and then at the end, they go to sleep. And so the idea was this much more rounded sense, because I felt that if we're going to affect people or help people, if we're going to affect people, get people to engage in understanding the war, we have to build a bridge to them to what they know best. Like, I totally respect people who go to Afghanistan and document the Taliban, civilian collateral damage, all of that. My strategy was different. And my strategy was founded on many, many years of photographing, trying to get people to understand complex events. And I just thought the easiest way into the American psyche is to photograph their young men and then subvert that.
Why subvert it?
Because otherwise you're being predictable, and therefore you're already pre-formatting to an idea that they have in their heads, and it's something that they don't actually engage with. You're challenging them. I'm challenging people with the photographs.